Hi, sexy people. Welcome to The Trouble with Sex. I'm Dr. Tammy. Today, we are going to explore male sexuality. We needed some more male juice on this show. We needed some more male energy, and I'm so excited because we have therapist, trainer, and as he identifies, dark chocolate lover, Eric Fitzmedred. Eric specializes in helping men improve their sex lives by learning to regulate their emotions, remove sexual entitlement, which we're going to find out about in a minute, and honor their sexual consent and negotiation skills. And I got to say, we totally need this conversation today. He is a member of the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. He's been published in 2 academic books, and he has a new book out, The Better Man, A Guide to Consent, Stronger Relationships, and Hotter Sex, which has tools, instructions, healing, and growth. And I almost, every time I read this, I want to say A Guide to Consent, Stranger Relationships, and Hotter Sex. So,
oh,
I know, it's so fun. I believe that today we have a wide range of relationships, and whether they're traditional or wide open or what some people might call strange, which I love the idea of, Eric has been a voice in the space around consent, which is why we wanted to have him on today. Welcome to the show, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to have you. So what else did I miss in your bio? Is there anything else that you feel like it's important to let our listeners know about you?
I think that one thing that kind of shapes how I approach these questions is that I'm bisexual, I'm polyamorous, and I am approaching these issues because I'm a high desire person who had to learn how to integrate my identity as a polyamorous person, as a kinky person. And I made a lot of mistakes along the way. Certainly, I'm trying to filter that lived experience through the processes of evidence-based practice and capture that in my book. But a lot of the hard lessons that I'm teaching in my book came from my hard lived experiences and making mistakes and hurting people. This is not a finger-wagging book. This is a, I know your pain. Let me teach you so you don't have to go through what I went through kind of book.
Fascinating. So that sort of answers the question, like, why did you write this book? But I'm wondering, you know, was it focusing on being a better man because that's what you're working on? Or is it some pushback against what's happening in the consent world today? Or
not at all pushback. I think it's really about noticing that in the world of consent and the broad message to men, that we need to do better, that we need voices about how to do better. I have seen how men are shielding their partners from the intensity of their sexuality, their passion, the real gift of their desire, and how that causes problems. But also, we need to figure out ourselves how to integrate that sexuality without shame, so that we can claim it, so that we can open up the conversations with our partners without facing our own shame. We still might experience tough conversations with our partners, but at least holding ourselves well and skillfully will let us find the right partners to connect to.
Well, it's interesting that you perceive men as shielding their partners from their sexuality. I almost see it the opposite, that people are saying that they don't know how to handle their partner's sexuality, whether it's with a male or a female or a transgender person.
I think it's both. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, because we often end up hiding parts of our sexuality, it ends up coming out sideways, and that ends up affecting and hurting our partners. I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think it aligns with what I talk about around integrating all the parts of yourself, which is the goal of living in integrity, right? So that you don't have to hide and compartmentalize and dismember or disintegrate all those parts of yourself. That's really living in integrity, is being able to own all those parts of you.
Right. I hope that that's what I'm offering to men. You know, first, an acknowledgement that that you've experienced shaming, that you've been told that men are dogs, men are pigs, men only want one thing, that you want to be a good man, that you want to be respected, loved, to have connection, to have hot sex, that's awesome. And we also need skills and tools for how to do that we haven't been taught in acknowledgement of the intensity of our desire. And that once we accept the intensity of that desire and have the skills, suddenly new possibilities open up for us.
So did you see the Barbie movie? I'm assuming that you saw it.
I did. Yeah.
But I think so. What was your reaction to that? I love the Ken Nuff moments. And I'm, you know, wondering what the comments about maleness, how they struck you.
Yeah, actually, the San Jose Mercury News interviewed me about my reaction to the Barbie movie, and I had a piece that was picked up by that. And what I put in there is, you know, the central reaction that I had to the Barbie movie was, this is a movie about women and women's experience. And men who are reacting negatively to it are looking at it as if that movie needed to speak to them and their pain. Instead of understanding, maybe it wasn't about you, and that's okay. It doesn't have to be about you.
Right.
And I think that actually I found personally the Barbie movie to be quite compassionate to men. And I loved the moment when Ken breaks down and starts crying, when he finally gets vulnerable, the connection that was available with Barbie returns, emerges. She apologizes to him, which in a way, I don't know that she needed to do, for keeping him at arm's length and for keeping him out of some parts of her life. And still, they were only going to be friends. But in his emotional awakening, when he cracked into real authentic vulnerability, then they could have the relationship that was possible.
I love that idea, though. I think you're absolutely right. I really got hooked into that too, but I loved how it came back around and she hung on to her independence, yeah, which is really interesting. And I think you talk about healthy masculinity and what that means in our evolving landscape of consent and how to stay in your masculine energy and understand a new way of negotiating sexual relationships. I wonder if you could say something about that.
Sure. You know, one of the terms that's emerging from current literature for men is that we're really not talking anymore about masculinity, healthy masculinity as a singular. We're really talking about a plurality, healthy masculinities, which allows us to be individuals, to find the forms of masculinity that we look up to, that fit the nature of the kind of man that we are and that allow us to be different and that to recognize, you know, maybe I, you know, like working on cars, watching sports and doing woodworking. And maybe I'm a poet and an artist, and maybe I'm very spiritual and I like doing yoga. And those are all different forms of masculinity, and each of them can have its own path to sexuality, its own manifestation, its own form of respect within our communities. And they're all good.
Yeah. And they're all important to integrate and accept in yourself, is what you're saying.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, well, let's just go back to this idea of consent a little bit, because you say that men still don't know really how consent works. I mean, that's kind of a global generalization, but
yeah.
Tell me what you mean.
So, my central thesis is not just that we don't know how consent works, but that really, I think we have an emotional, relational, developmental process to engage in. We need to be able to have a vibrant, multidimensional sense of health and well-being so that we aren't only receiving human connection from our partners, that we aren't only receiving human connection from our partners also through sex, but that we have a community, we have a sense of meaning and purpose, we have a source of self-esteem other than is our partner giving us pleasure and are we able to give them pleasure. We also need to be able to regulate our own emotions. If we feel rejected, okay, but now how are we going to handle that experience? If we feel disappointed, sexually? How are we going to regulate that experience? Instead of getting a no from a partner and then walking around like a sad sack for the next week, which ends up creating unintended emotional pressure for our partners to have sex with us, not because they want to, but because that will help us regulate our emotions for ourselves. This process is something that we can take responsibility for. We can be more open about. We can lean on our friends, our communities, our, you know, the other men in our lives, and we can become better able to engage in the consent conversations that we do know how to have, but with resilience. So that when we get a no, we just say, oh, okay, where are the yeses? And we can stay in the conversation looking for the joy that's still available, despite the fact that we got one no. It's not about our whole path to access to human connection just fell apart because I got a single no in the consent conversation. The consent conversation shifts from, can I get yes to consent is here for me? I can protect myself, whether I'm saying yes or no to sex or yes or no to the relationship that's on offer. I can protect my sense of safety with, gosh, this partner is saying they don't want to have a consent conversation. Do I feel safe here with this partner? Do they seem erratic? Do they seem really engaged in my safety as well? And realizing that consent conversations aren't just once and done, I got the green light, now I can plow ahead, but an ongoing process that can be revoked at any time.
Mm-hmm. So we're really looking for yes means yes versus no means no. We're sort of shifting the conversation to a pleasurable yes.
Yes. Yes means yes. And yes means yes right now. And that can change. And yes might shift to that didn't feel good after all. And that's not, you know, an indictment of your worth as a human being.
Yeah. And let's be in that pleasure together right in this moment. And it might be more pleasurable for me than it is for you, or you for me. And there's right. So many nuances there, I think. It's not just black and white.
And with a new partner, you know, gosh, just because this didn't work this time, maybe there's still room to learn and grow. You know, we can become better lovers by learning to receive the feedback and be in the learning process of like, okay, you know, my partner said, you know, move my hand in circles. Great. I thought I did. It still didn't work. What do I need to learn? Now I can become a better lover over time instead of feeling dejected by just getting some negative feedback.
Well, I think that's true for all people, not just men, right? We're none of us are really good at getting negative feedback.
You know, I think that's one of the things that I've been hearing from readers who of other genders, that basically what I've done is I've packaged it for a male audience, but there's nothing really special to just men here. Being a good lover, being an open, emotionally grounded person is a fairly universalizable experience. We all have to regulate our emotions. We all have to engage in consent. And I wanted to write to men because I work with a lot of men in my practice and I love helping.
Well, let's talk about the men that are influencing some young people on and older people actually on social media and, you know, talking about this idea of what we have called toxic masculinity, which I don't really like because I think it's so generalized and overarching. But let's talk about people like Andrew Tate, who I don't even like to say his name because I feel like it's toxic in this space. But what's happening there with this? I mean, people may not know who he is. And so maybe you want to fill in our listeners a little bit with the backstory, but it's a massage, like you call him a misogynistic influencer. That's exactly what he is.
Absolutely. So he presents a caricature of manhood that is muscle-bound, rich, wealthy, anti-intimacy, and extremely misogynistic. And it is incredibly damaging for people to listen to. It comes with the promise of making his listeners more effective lovers, more skillful lovers. And what it does is polarizes them into hatred. And then these influencers do this little turn. They say, you know, this is what men are. and then act this way to be a real man. Act like me. And then their listeners or the people being influenced by them begin acting that way, and they experience an intense amount of pushback. Gosh, that's gross. That's disgusting. I don't want that. I don't want to date people like you. And then the men go back to the influencer and say, hey, it didn't work. And then the influencer says, well, that's because of feminism. And now we get isolated into these little bubbles of just all the men who know how to be men, rather than any group needing to listen to our community to understand what it means to be a skillful, beloved community member. We define each other, and that isolation serves no one. And it really ends up radicalizing young men and men who listen to any element of the manosphere, hookup artists or pickup artists, men's right activists, the incels, all of them.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I had a lot of men who identify as incels that write to me through my website and say, you know, well, it's not my fault that they won't have sex with me. And, you know, like they're angry, rageful people. It's really kind of frightening.
So this is the one thing that I really did listen to in the process of writing my book. I spent time watching some of these influencers, and I'll tell you the thing that they do well is that they empathize with men's pain. And once I saw that and understood it, I was like, of course they do. That's what I do in my office with men too, who are struggling individually in their relationships, who are struggling to date. I start by saying, of course you want to love. Of course you want to be loved. Of course you want pleasure. Of course this isolation that you're experiencing is painful. And we can turn that pain into anger and hatred at other people, disempowering you and further isolating you from your community. Or we can have empathy for that pain and fill in the gaps of your skill about how to connect, and we can change your experience, and we can create the pathways for you to make that heart connection that you long for. And I hope that I've made that turn for my readers.
No, I really like that. We'll be right back.
It all comes down to story. If you're working on a project, whether it's a nonfiction memoir, educational material, or a work of fiction, your ability to engage a reader comes down to telling a compelling story. I'm Douglas Moser, and I've helped writers hone their craft from proposal to finished product. I've coached budding memoirists and talented novelists, helping them find the story and refine their work. With a background in journalism, film, theater, fiction, and nonfiction, I can work with you in any capacity. To learn more, check out my website at douglasmoser.com. That's douglasmoser.com. And if you mention The Trouble with Sex or Dr. Tammy, I'll give you a 20% discount on all our work.
Want to create a more exciting, sexy date night? Whether you've just started dating or are already in a committed relationship, the new Date Night card deck is designed to bring you and your partner to new heights of passion and romantic intimacy. Created by relationship expert Dr. Tammy Nelson, the Date Night card deck includes a variety of sexy and stimulating questions and action cards designed to help you find new ways to communicate and connect. Move your relationship into new realms and maybe even jumpstart a wild and sexy night. Order your Date Night card deck today on Amazon. Just type Date Night card deck Tammy Nelson. That's Date Night card deck Tammy Nelson. Create your exciting and sexy date night today.
So tell us a little bit more in maybe some specific terms, like how do you help men who really want to do a better job? They want to be better. They want to have healthier relationships. They want to connect more, you know, in any kind of relationships, but particularly romantic, sexual relationships. What would you say?
Yeah, one of the first things I think we need to do is that we need to begin encountering some of our myths about men, about relationships, about sexuality, and we need to engage in a restorative sex education process for ourselves. I do some of that in my book by teaching about the nature of desire, dispelling myths about testosterone, dispelling myths about sexuality so that we can understand why desire works the way that it does, and beginning to realize that whether we're looking at porn or whether we're looking at romantic comedies, the messages that we've gotten about how people work, they're really not serving us. Our partners are individuals. They are not caricatures. We are individuals. We are not caricatures. There is not a 2D cutout of what it means to be a man. There is not a 2D cutout about what you like and what it means that you like it. And we really need to update our models, create individualism around it, and come to understand ourselves inside of that vast landscape so that we can update it and not bring these stamps of, you know, this is how you will react if you like me. This is how you will behave if I am doing the right thing, and getting frustrated when reality doesn't match the models in our head.
You know, I have a lot of gay male listeners who feel like they're already really in tune with this idea.
So let me speak to them for a second. So I really try to be as inclusive as possible. And I do think that a lot of gay men have already begun challenging notions of manhood, masculinity, updated some of these models. And when I work with gay men in my practice, one of the things that I find is, the basics of consent in terms of like getting on Grindr, Scruff, Squirt, whatever it is, and having a hookup, gay men are definitely ahead of the game compared to straight men in terms of just having the basic conversations of, hey, what are you into? That works for me, that doesn't. And sometimes in terms of navigating the human experience of like, yeah, I really want to have a hot, sexy experience with you, but I'd also like to be treated like a human being at the same time. And that's why I think a lot of gay men who have been doing a lot of hookups for a long time end up getting a little bit of fatigue after a decade or so of that. They end up feeling like, oh, I could hook up, but am I going to be seen as a human being? And a lot of gay men in my practice anyway end up downshifting to regulars instead of hookups.
Yeah, because they feel objectified. That's what you mean by not feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you what I ask all my guests and all my experts. What do you think is the biggest trouble with sex today?
I focus a lot on we aren't comfortable talking about it. And we, because of that, it's not very easy for us to admit what we want. And if we can't admit what we want, we can't ask for it. And then nobody gives it to us. And we also then have difficulty receiving the same kind of information from our partners.
I'm laughing, not because of your answer, but because everyone I've interviewed today had the same thing. I think we know, like in our culture, like how hard it is to really talk about sex. Like which is why I have this podcast and why so many people listen, because they want to talk about sex. They want to have the language. They want to communicate what they need. They don't want to assume that their partner can read their mind. But it's really hard to cross that bridge, right? It's like the Rubicon. It feels so distant over there.
We need practice, I think, talking about sex in matter-of-fact, real terms outside of our sexual contexts that aren't salacious, aren't shaming, so that we can lean into having those conversations more skillfully. Well, by the time we get into trying to have a consent conversation with somebody that we'd like to have sex with.
You know, it's so interesting because I wrote Getting the Sex You Want. Had to be 10 years ago. We were not talking about consent then. I mean, I'm a little older than you, but I don't remember even considering writing about that in the book. It was more about how do you have more passion and less inhibition, and how do you talk about, so how do you cross that bridge? How do you have that conversation? But we didn't talk about, once you get over there, is it okay? Like, is there a healthy yes here? It wasn't even a thing. So I really appreciate how far we've come in the past decade from, you know, Me Too and really speaking up, at least finding our voice around what that really means. And I think for, you know, experts like you and getting men to think about what that means in the transition for all of us, not just, you know, encouraging and supporting the women in our lives to find a voice, to stand up for themselves around consent, but also for their own pleasure.
Yes.
I like that you're bringing that conversation into the male voice as well.
I hope so. And I hope that's also where we bring in an integration of sexual diversity among men. You know, if we take a look at the Pride Parade and we look at gay sexuality and all of its varied, vibrant, creative, out and loud and proud, celebrated versions of male sexuality, what would it mean for straight sexuality to also be celebrated, but without it needing to be put on the viewer, right? I'm going to celebrate whatever my kinks are, whatever my interests are, whatever creativity I bring. And because I can accept the diversity among men, I know also my sexuality is a part of that.
Yeah. And I think there's more and more people, men and women, that are exploring their own orientation and are feeling more fluid about it, but they don't feel like they want to take up the queer space. You know, they're like, oh, well, maybe I'm not queer enough and I'm taking up too much space from someone else. And maybe if we could twist that around to what you're saying is like, you know, you explore you in the ways that you can come out to yourself. In ways that are pleasurable and celebratory, and that it doesn't matter if you're coming out to the rest of the world. You don't have to be like other people. You don't have to feel one way or the other, as long as you can celebrate that for you.
Start inside. Yeah, absolutely.
Start inside. Yeah, that's lovely. We're going to take a question from a listener. And let's see. Oh, I have Steve. Steve from Minneapolis. Thanks,
my
Steve.
Hometown.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
Nice. Oh, I hope you don't know each other. Maybe you do. Maybe that's why he's writing. He doesn't say that. But he says, I'm a man in my 40s out in the dating world, and I don't want to say the wrong thing to a woman if I'm attracted to her. Nice, Steve. How do I let her know I think she's hot without seeming like a total jerk? Nice, Steve. Nice question. Thanks, Steve from Minneapolis. What do you think, Eric?
Well, I think first, Steve's sentiment is shared by a lot of men. I want to express desire, but I don't want to come on too strong. I don't want to be overbearing. And I think the answer is already in the question. Steve, what if you just said, hey, I want to express my attraction to you, but I don't want to come on too strong. I know that that can be the experience of a lot of women out there. How do you like to be told that somebody finds you attractive? Now you're just opening up the dialogue. You're demonstrating that sensitivity that you have, and you're using that as the intro to a kind of consent conversation about how do we talk about desire? It may not be yet how do we jump into the sack together, but you're already beginning to open up gently. How do we talk about our relationship in a meta way without it ever being me pushing it onto you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see this in people who are polyamorous. You know, in my book Open Monogamy, I give people the conversation starters to wherever you are on the spectrum of being open. And I think you probably know this personally very well, the idea of talking about and negotiating where your boundaries are and what you want, what you don't want, sort of comes with the territory.
The first question on a polyamorous date is usually, what kind of relationship are you looking for?
Right. And to be in the constant, fluid and flexible conversation about what it's going to look like with all of your partners. And I feel for Steve that if that's not the first conversation he's going to have with a woman in a bar.
Right. And there isn't a template here, because different women are going to want different things. Different people are going to want different things. So learning how to adapt and starting with that intention, I don't want to cause harm. That's the beautiful place to start. That's the thing that is going, if you lead with that, then your partners can guide you.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So you're sort of giving them more power in the conversation to take their choices back.
Yeah. It's a collaborative process. And let's say, you know, to Steve, right? What if his partner said, well, I don't like my partners to ever say that they're attracted to me. Steve might hear that and go, okay, well, the immediate thing is, okay, well, that's what I'll do. I just won't ever say anything. But it's really important. And again, in that shift, consent is for us too. Okay. Well, that's clear feedback, but does that work for me? Maybe I really like expressing I want, maybe I insist on having a pathway to express my attraction somehow. I can be adaptive within a certain range. But if the answer is don't, oh, well, now I know this partner isn't compatible for me, and I get to opt out of that agreement.
And what if the woman says, I don't know, what do you want to say to me?
Yeah, okay, well, let's test it out, right? Here's the way that I would express my attraction. Now that I've said that, how does that feel for you? Or you could go in a different direction. How have other partners expressed attraction for you that worked? How have partners expressed attraction for you that didn't work? Let me learn the landscape of your erotic experience. Let me patch that onto what has and hasn't worked in my relationships. Let's begin feeling each other out and learning the pathways. Sometimes the same words by two different partners will land very differently. That becomes a curious question. Why did those same words not work here and work there? We can get curious about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Makes sense. So any last words of wisdom, any tips and tricks, any real things that you want to make sure our listeners really get, like really hear from you?
The most important thing I always want men to hear from me is you are good, you are loved, you are valuable, you are important, you belong in the human community, your sexuality is a gift to the world, and what I hope I do and what I hope you find is a way to deliver that gift in a way that's skillful and kind and loving as you intend it to be.
Lovely, lovely. Well, thank you. And thank you for being here. Tell my sexy listeners how they can find more from you and find your book and anything else that you want to share with them.
My book, The Better Man, A Guide to Consent, Stronger Relationships, and Hotter Sex is available wherever books are sold. You can find me on social media at Dr. Eric Fitz, DREERICFITZ. And you can find my website at drericfitz.com. And I have links and more information about my book there.
That's perfect. And for all our listeners, we're going to put that info in our show notes as well. But thank you so much, Dr. Eric, for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And to all my sexy listeners, if you want one of your questions answered on our show, go to thetroublewithsex.com. And if we don't answer it on our show by an expert, I might even email you directly. I can't wait till next time. This has been another episode of The Trouble with Sex. I'm Dr. Tammy. Stay sexy, stay happy. Till next time. Listen to episodes of The Trouble with Sex on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Please share and rate the show. We so appreciate and thank you for supporting us. Have a question about your relationship or sexual wellness? Visit thetroublewithsex.com and click on Ask Dr. Tammy to send us your questions. For sex positive tips, live events, and updates, join our mailing list and follow us on Instagram at The Trouble with Sex. The Trouble with Sex is produced by Brandy Savick. Audio for this episode was designed by Bethany Knoll Productions. This episode was engineered and mixed by Bruce Hirschfield. Music by Bruce Hirschfield.